Hi, this is Dan Jaffe for KBOO. On November 10th, Evo Morales, the first indigenous president of the majority indigenous nation of Bolivia, was deposed after a highly contested election on October 20th, and he fled the country to receive political asylum in Mexico. Morales and his Movement to Socialism Party, or MAS, were elected in 2005 and held power for 14 years. Morales was a key element of the Pink Tide, the wave of left-leaning and center-left governments that swept to power in much of South America and part of Central America in the 2000s. After decades of dictatorship, debt, and imposed austerity, and these governments attempted to forge a new economic model that was more independent of the U.S., the IMF, and the World Bank. So what are the factors that led to Morales' removal? Was this indeed a coup? And what should progressives and those on the left understand about the situation in Bolivia that led up to the present conflict? Joining me today to help unpack these and other questions is Dr. Gisela Rodriguez, a Bolivian sociologist who's living here in Portland, and I think listeners may be surprised by some of what she has to say. Welcome, Gisela.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much for this space and for the opportunity to offer a more nuanced perspective about what is happening in Bolivia. So yes, I am from Bolivia. I am also very proud of my indigenous roots. My grandmothers were mujeres de pollera, meaning they were indigenous women. And both of my parents speak Quechua, one of the indigenous languages from Bolivia. I am also a socialist, and I deeply believe in the principles that it is the people, the ones that should decide the collective destiny of their society. And for my doctoral dissertation, I work with indigenous communities in the Bolivian Altiplano in 2018.
Well, let's start right out with the issue I sort of framed at the outset. Bolivia and Evo Morales since 2005 have been viewed by many progressives and those on the left as an icon, as a beacon of hope by critics of neoliberalism and supporters of economic self-determination around the world. What do people need to understand about the very complex and volatile situation in Bolivia that led up to the current departure of Morales and the somewhat violent conflicts that have followed his removal?
Yeah, I think we need to understand Morales in the last 15 years, the pros and cons of his government. We also need to better understand who the opposition to Morales is, because there is sort of like a simplification that everyone who's opposed to Morales is either a racist or like part of the right wing, which is not true. So if you allow me, Dan, I want to give you some of the context of like a Morales. So 15 years ago, in 2000 and 2003, Bolivia experienced major mobilizations against neoliberal policies such as the privatization of water. These protests were very similar to the ones that Chile is leading today, you know. And by the way, I stand in full solidarity with the people from Chile. And in 2005, it was these radical movements that made possible the election of our first indigenous president, Evo Morales. And then this was an incredible moment of hope for people like me and the majority of Bolivians who supported Morales and his anti-capitalist and anti-colonial project. And to give you a comparison, you know, Morales was to Bolivians what Obama was for Americans in the U.S., a president from a minority or an excluded majority in the case of Bolivia, for a nation that is so embedded in racist structure that in itself is progress. And I think it's also very important to recognize that there were very good things about Morales and his party, the MAS. A brief summary of what maybe many people already know, like the reduction of poverty. There were redistribute programs that benefit mostly poor and working class Bolivians, indigenous people, and an impressive economic growth by an average of 4% since 2005. Now, this economic growth was based on the extraction of natural resources such as natural gas and minerals, but Morales was able to capture these rents and transform them into these progressive programs.
And I think it's worth dwelling a little bit on those major reductions in poverty and income inequality. Some of the statistics are quite dramatic. The reduction in poverty from something like 60% to 35%, hunger reduced from the high 30% to 15%. The Gini index went from something like 0.6 to better than the U.S., 0.43. Investments in infrastructure, so significant improvements using those resources captured from natural resource extraction, yeah.
Yes, and even in my interviews with indigenous people in the Bolivian Altiplano, they told me, you know, President Morales was the only one who did something for the poor people, from receiving nothing to receive something. You know, that for people was a change, and it was indeed what you said. At the same time, however, we started to see a change in Morales and his government from a so-called revolutionary process to a project to maintain state power. And there were ongoing cases of extreme corruption, nepotism, and, you know, also that economic progress that Bolivia experienced was a result of the extractivist model of development. In other words, the economy was never diversified, but it continued to focus on the extraction of natural resources, which has serious and negative socio-environmental effects, especially for indigenous people. And here I want to focus on two major events. For many people like me who supported Morales, the turning point was the Tifnis conflict in 2011. As you know, Dan, Tifnis is a protective natural area that is also home for many indigenous communities in the Bolivian lowlands. And the Morales government had a plan to build a highway throughout these lands without prior and informed consent, which is a violation of indigenous rights. So these indigenous communities protested, and what was the response of Morales? Repression and violence. The second event is in 2016, when Morales called for a referendum to ask Bolivians if we should change the constitution to allow him to run for a fourth presidential election. Now, remember that the Bolivian constitution allows only two consecutive terms for the presidency. So Morales lost the referendum, yet he decided to run for the presidency and anyway. Therefore, his candidacy for this last presidential election was unconstitutional. And for many of us, this is the epicenter of the conflicts and why we are in the chaos we are today.
Yeah. So let's then move to talk about the opposition to Morales. A lot of people have seen on in media coverage, on TV, right-wing groups, military, some of the right-wing groups from the eastern part of Bolivia, and that is certainly a part of the picture. But talk about the different facets of opposition to Morales from both the right and from the left and from popular or progressive forces as well.
Yeah, so here I don't want to talk about the so-called, in quotation marks, leaders such as like Camacho, because Luis Fernando Camacho is a no one. You know, he's a racist capitalist from the far right of the lowlands who took advantage of this popular protest to become sort of like a hero. And I think this was a big mistake of the protest against Morales. But instead, you know, I want to focus on the people on the ground. Now, it is true that part of the opposition to Morales are racist and fascist groups such as the Unión Juvenil Cruceñista or the Youth Union from the city of Santa Cruz that never supported Morales because they couldn't tolerate being ruled by an indigenous person. I mean, that's how they are. However, they did not lead the massive protests against Morales. We don't want anything to do with them either. And as Jeffrey Bever mentioned, he's a scholar who has done extensive work in Bolivia, there was also significant participation of people from the urban cities, many of them middle class, who are not racist, but who were very easily manipulated by right-wing ideologies. For example, chanting, "This is not Venezuela," or "Evo dictator," which is ridiculous because Morales was not a dictator. But yeah, they were part of the mobilizations. But the people on the ground opposed to Morales were mostly from the urban cities and the rural cities as well, who are also working class indigenous people. You know, like, come on, this is Bolivia. Most people are indigenous. Even if you live in the urban cities, doesn't mean that you are not indigenous or you are middle class. And here it's also important to mention that many groups that once supported Morales joined and led the protests against him, such as ADEPCOCA. They are the Departmental Association of Coca Farmers and Producers from the city of La Paz. And remember that Coca, that Evo Morales was a coca farmer, and these people were part of his political base, but then a few years ago they departed from him.
And also, as I understand, a lot of indigenous groups, especially from the eastern part of the country, and environmentalists, feminist groups have sort of become part of the opposition to Morales. Talk about what changed during the middle of his three terms and how the position of his party toward some of the mass popular organizations, labor groups, indigenous groups, shifted, and why you feel like there's so much anger and resentment toward Morales on part of these mass social movements.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, I think for many of us, the turning point was the Tifnis conflict. That, you know, this was a protest by indigenous people demanding their rights for informed consent, which Morales said, like, no, we're not going to, you know, ask you whether you want this highway to build through your lands. And their response of Morales was also like repression and violence. That was, you know, that was the turning point for many, like, people who supported Morales. And the other major event was the 2016 referendum. You know, like Morales, he called for the referendum. He asked Bolivians if we should change the constitution. And here we need to remember that the new constitution of Bolivia is considered among the most progressive documents of this type. And yet Morales lost the referendum, but then he decided, like, oh, not to respect the vote and to continue his candidacy for the presidency. So I think those two major issues were what really frustrated people who support Morales once.
And talk a little more about the sort of decision to push on for a fourth presidential term. In retrospect, it seems like this was probably a very big strategic mistake for Mas, or at least it really blew up in their face. Why did Mas not go the route, do you think, of developing new leaders, new indigenous leaders, for example, who could have run in Morales' place for the elections in this year in 2019?
Yeah, so I think the problem with the Mas party, you know, the party of Morales, as well as many, unfortunately, many people on the left, is like we have this idea of caudillismo, that we need this strong leader, this one person. Like, if it is not Morales, no one else could do this. And I think that was a mistake because, like, one of the projects of revolutionary party, such as, you know, like Mas, should have been the development of cadre, of the development of leaders, indigenous leaders, non-indigenous leaders, but they didn't. They were too focused that it was Morales, the only one who could lead this so-called revolution. And I think they were so fixed on that ideology that they said, like, no, Morales is... And they were still believing, and I think underestimate how much, you know, popularity they lost.
Yes. At the same time, Morales did get something like 46 or 47% of the votes in this presidential election in October 20th, so more than any other candidate. So who is Morales' base, the people who still voted for him?
Yeah, no, that's a very important point to remember, Dan, and thank you, because, yeah, it's true, like, at least 30, if not 40% of the population is still support Morales. And these are like mostly coca farmers from the Chapare region, where that's a strong part of his political base, also miners. Also indigenous people, both in the cities and in the rural areas, are part of this political base. And I know there is also some discussion about, and we need to remember that these groups, whether they're pro-Morales or against Morales, are also very heterogeneous, because also part of Morales is what Weber calls, like, indigenous petit bourgeois, you know?
Petit bourgeois,
the people, like, indigenous people who under Morales became, you know, like, their socioeconomic status improved, which is nothing wrong with that, but the ideology of capitalism is still there. You know, they might be indigenous, but they're still with the capitalist ideas.
Well, and I want to move from there to talk about Morales's relationship with capital, with domestic capital, national business, but also with transnational capital. Your research is on neo-extractivism in Bolivia and the mining and drilling for oil and gas, etc. And many people sort of aware that Morales, you know, either renationalized or shifted the balance of negotiation of extraction of revenue from the mineral extraction to more favor the state, and that gave him the resources to then distribute in these substantial social programs that reduced inequality. But there was also, as I understand, a strongly increasing focus on fossil fuel extraction, on fracking. They began to do fracking, a lot of mining, transnational mining companies. Talk about the role of petrochemical and oil and gas extraction and mining. They have lithium reserves, and what Morales' relationship was with the transnational companies that were interested in developing these resources.
Yeah, well, pretty much it was a very convenient and friendly relationship. And, you know, as Pablo Solon, who was the former UN ambassador for Evo Morales until 2011, mentioned, it is true that the state, you know, the government has to negotiate with capitalism. The state cannot just turn away, because if that's what will happen, is what will happen in Chile with Allende, right? So it needs capital. But there are also principles and repression against indigenous people, the very people that Morales promised to protect, like that can, which we cannot tolerate that, right? I mean, that was the big contradiction, that Morales was having this friendly, cozy relationships with the extractivist sector. And for a while, I mean, we have some political stability in Bolivia precisely because he had a good relationship with capital, you know? It's not like what he was saying, like, oh, capitalist is either capitalism of Mother Earth. Actually, for Evo Morales, was more of a support for the capitalist class in Bolivia, especially in the lowlands, which is kind of ironic because they are the ones that now, you know, demanded also his resignation.
What looking forward, talk about the situation in the current moment and what do you expect is likely to happen next? It's clear that Morales had lost support from a substantial part of the population, but still had the backing of almost half of the country. His party, the MAS party, has 2/3 of the Congress. We're also seeing the rise of ultra-white right-wing forces that some analysts are saying have basically taken advantage of this space created by a more genuine popular opposition. There is a well-known commentator, Uruguayan Raul Cibecci, who you sent me an article. He wrote, "We can't forget that in this moment there is the serious danger that the racist, colonial, and patriarchal right wing will succeed in taking advantage of the situation to seize power and provoke a bloodbath." What do you see as the most likely path forward? Are we going to be seeing new elections, power sharing? Is there a risk of another full-scale military coup, a return to military dictatorship, so that Bolivia's experienced in the past? What do you see as likely to happen going forward?
Yeah, so the risk of a military coup is always, now especially, is always present. And unfortunately, the interim president, Jeanette Añez, who took the presidency in an emergency situation, is very conservative. You know, the first thing she did was to come to the palace with a Bible in her hands. And she had made some very racist, she had some very racist tweets about Morales, and she's already questioning the participation of the MAS party in the upcoming elections. And I think, you know, that's not a call for peace and negotiation, but that's going to lead to more confrontations if we don't let the party of Morales, the MAS, to participate. At the same time, you know, as Silvia Rivera Cusicanqui, who's a famous sociologist and activist from Bolivia, stated, Evo Morales is gone, but our hope to build a plurinational Bolivia, our hope to build a Bolivia that is represented by our indigenous root, is not. So, you know, like, we need to remember that what happened in Bolivia was because social movements did it, not Evo Morales. So Evo Morales is the product of social movements, not the other way around. This struggle continues. And we have to remember, like, you know, like, in Bolivia, everything is possible because Bolivian people have demonstrated throughout history that we can, you know, overcome. Like, people already saying, like, oh, this is Bolivia is going to be like Brazil, you know, with another Bolsonaro, because Camacho is like Bolsonaro. But maybe, but it's not yet. So we cannot already give up and grant, you know, the far right, you know, a win, a takeover, because they haven't. This means that we still need to struggle and support the people in solidarity and not the state.
Well, what would that look like? What would progressives and those on the left who are concerned about the same kinds of outcomes, this flourishing of genuine democracy, a plurinational Bolivia, the ability to maintain an independent model of economic and social development and ecological development in Latin America, what perspectives can people here in the North take, or what actions can they take to sort of support that outcome, which seems to sort of be getting lost between the other various forces that are sort of jockeying for power right now?
Well, we need to be critical of whoever is in the state, whether it is Morales or whether it is this far right wing, you know, people that have sort of like take advantage of this momentum. Yeah. You know, like, I think that's important, because people are very easy, like, there is this kind of victimization of Evo Morales, of what happened, but we need to be critical of that.
Very briefly, we have a moment in Latin America with enormous change and upheaval. Sort of center-left government was just reelected in Argentina next door. President Lula da Silva, former President Lula da Silva in Brazil, after his being jailed for over a year and a half, was just freed from jail. Mass protests in Chile. What do you see the situation in Bolivia signifying for the prospects for popular, progressive, indigenous movements, for the Pink Tide, the left project, both in Bolivia and in Latin America?
Well, again, we need to remember that it's not these leaders. It's not Hugo Chavez, it's not Lula, it's not Evo Morales. It's the people who create these movements. Therefore, our hope to build this, you know, plurinational country based on indigenous, you know, identity is not over. The struggle continues.
And where can people turn to find out more good information, analysis, news on what's happening in Bolivia? Can you suggest a few websites, authors, or news sources?
Yeah, well, I have, in Spanish, you can always check Mujeres Creando, an anarcho-feminist group that is very well recognized in Bolivia, Página 7, a news outlet. Also, like the analysis by Jeffrey Weber is very...
Weber. W-E-B-B-E-R.
Very important because he's very critical. He offers you that nuance, and I can send you a couple of those links.
And we will post links to those and other sources on our Old Mole Variety, our webpage, the page for this particular segment. So I have been speaking with Dr. Gisela Rodriguez, a Bolivian sociologist living here in Portland, and we've been talking about the aftermath of Evo Morales' leaving power, being removed from power, and the prospects for progressive and left forces in Bolivia in the aftermath. Thank you so much, Gisela Rodriguez.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks again.
Improvisando la onda, hip hop boliviano. Esta es tu mafia candela, tu mafia andina, divina, ardiente como el fuego que circula entre tus venas.
That is Santa Malo. It's an all-female Bolivian hip-hop group, a great find. I suggest looking them up.